This message is the property of H. David Edwards and Elam Bible Institute, and presented free of charge for private use only. Permission to use this message publicly may be requested by contacting Elam Bible Institute at 7245 College Street, Lima, New York, 14485.
Sheldon's last rendition is not something more than an indication of the range of your musical expertise. I want to talk to you about that. One of these days, I expect that an application form, which will be circulated to the members of the admissions committee, will have an answer to a question that reads, "Why do you want to come to Elim?" that will read a little bit differently. I wouldn't be surprised if someday a girl will say, "Because my mother told me that it was the best place that she knows for finding her husband." Or else a fellow will say, "Because my friend who enrolled last year wrote home and said there are some cute cookies here." Now, perhaps I really misunderstand motivation. There is a possibility that I sow seeds in saying what I have done that will bear fruit in previously barren areas. Maybe the idea had never entered your innocent minds. If that is so, then I am very surprised. A lady's watch has been found. The girls who lost it may see Brother Mahaffey at the end of the service. I want to continue talking to you about this matter that Sheldon introduced to us. But I would like some feedback, so I'm going to ask all the fellows in the front row if they will come and distribute to you some blank 3x5 cards. Just put 12 or 15 at the end of each row. We'll collect the cards at some time during the service, possibly before the end of it. Whether they have been written on or left blank, we'll still collect them. And any questions that are raised in your mind by anything that I might say, I would be glad to receive from you. Thank you. Do you all have a card? Now, as far as your motivation in coming here is concerned, some of you might genuinely have meant what you said. I want to know God. I have heard good reports. If that be so, I want to hold you to that. And so I want to talk to you about the danger of putting the heart before the course. For some freshmen who have been here for 2 weeks, it might already be too late. For some of you who have already committed yourselves, you might well have discovered that this is an excellent place to find a life partner. There's no good reason why you should not. And at least it might well provide some basis for communication in your declining years. When over your social security checks, which you will be receiving in Florida, of course, you will talk about that talk in the chapel that we heard from Brother Edwards. And you together will laugh, perhaps one of you somewhat bitterly. Solomon said that there were some things that he didn't understand. Now, if he could not understand, you will not be surprised that I do not understand. He was more experienced in a number of fields than I am. I've never yet built a stable. That was one thing that he obviously knew more about than I do. I've never built a palace. But apart from stable construction and palace erection, Solomon said, I don't understand the way of the eagle in the air. I don't understand the way of a lizard on a rock. I don't understand the way of a ship in the sea. And I don't understand the way of a man with a maid. Now he tried hard to understand it. Often. But he was still perplexed. I know of no school that teaches eagles to fly or lizards to crawl. There are schools which will teach you how to sail a ship. So the Solomon said that he was surprised and did not understand some things that were instinctive and some things that are learned. And a part of our developing relationship as men and women under God is instinctive. If you had to teach a baby to suck, the baby would starve before he had learned his first lesson. And somehow or other, I don't know how, there are some things about boy-girl relationships that nobody has to teach us. We just know that it will be good. But it might be gooder if we learned. There are some things that come naturally, and there are some things that are better learned. The first thing that a woman asks when she is giving birth is what? What's the first question a new mother asks? What is it? But nowadays, if she comes from Denver, Colorado, she might ask, who are they? Because that's the most significant thing about you. And if you believe in a loving God, you must recognize that it is no accident. When God made them male and female, he didn't wring his hands and say, oh, good heavens above, what have I done? He did it that way. The most significant thing about you, which influences everything else about you, is the fact that God made them in His image, male and female, created He them. Now, as far as God is concerned, the distinctions are easily recognized. At a certain time of life, it doesn't really matter. You didn't know there was any difference, did you? If you can remember that far back. Now, however, you have become aware. Bernard Shaw, who was a cynic and is not to be trusted in everything that he said, said that, in his opinion, love was an exaggeration of the difference between the sexes. Well, I'm glad for the difference. I don't know what it would be like kissing a man with a mustache. I'm glad for the difference. And another thing that you need to recognize is that sex was not the fruit of which Eve partook in the garden. I recall counseling a young man who was deeply frustrated after 6 months of marriage because his wife was sure that sex was the forbidden fruit. God saw that there was something that was not good before man fell. Right? He saw that it was not good for man to be alone. And so He made woman, not as man's helpmeet, which is how we sometimes read the King James Version, but as man's helpmeet, that is, a partner suited for him. God's complement for man is woman. And there is something in man that is deficient until such time as it has been made up by woman. That is something that only woman can do for man. It is woman's shame that she was made after man and made in order to answer man. It is woman's glory that only she can answer man. And those of you who will find God's provision for you by way of a husband will need to recognize continually that God has given you a precious treasure in a man, and you have some responsibility for shaping him. It is man's glory that woman was made for him. It is man's shame that he needs woman for him. And your wife is a little bit like your looks, because they say that when you're born, you get the looks that your parents gave you, but by the time you're 25, you have the looks that you deserve. And if after 25 years of marriage, you don't like the wife that you have, it might largely be your fault. Because you have the responsibility for tuning her. She's like a violin. She might be discordant, but you can tune her. You can shape her. Man is incomplete without woman, and vice versa. I'm not detracting from the fact that there are some who are eunuchs for the kingdom's sake. I have no wish to minimize in any measure, at any time, the noble part that has been played in the kingdom of God by ladies who have forsaken marriage for the call of the gospel. But ideally and ordinarily, it is God's plan that we should be wed. And is it suggestive that we sometimes speak of each other as my better half? Is that meaningful? And the unity that we are made for is not the unity of similarity, but a complementary unity. It's not two forks together. It's not two spoons together. It's a knife and fork. And sometimes they get at cross purposes. But that's the way that a knife and fork were intended to be used. Now, your sexuality is a fact which affects the whole of the rest of life. Your sexuality will affect you physically, emotionally, socially, mentally, and spiritually. And you ought not to think of your sexuality as being something apart from these things. You ought not to think of yourself as a pie, having a social segment and a mental segment, a physical segment, an emotional segment, and a spiritual segment. You might have those segments, but your sexuality is the filling in the pie. Your sexuality is partly physical and partly non-physical. It is partly hormonal and it is partly mental or spiritual. And like the problem of flesh in the scriptures, it is something you have to learn to live with without necessarily being overcome by it. I think that one of the things that comes as a surprise to some young people is that boys and girls think differently. They don't only look different, but they feel different. It'll help you greatly if you understand that there is a basic fundamental difference between male and female reactions. When a girl asks a fellow to help her with her homework, she's thinking about algebra. But that's the farthest thing from his mind. And the girl quite often is somewhat surprised and embarrassed and doesn't understand when in the mind of the fellow, obviously algebra was intended to lead to something else. All that she had in mind was algebra. Now, that a fellow thinks of something else other than algebra does not make him dirty. That just means that he's a fellow. And that should not be taken to mean that all fellows are dirty. It's just perfectly natural. It is right that should be. A girl reacts with her heart, a fellow reacts with his head. As far as intimate relationships are concerned, a girl needs arousal and a fellow is always ready. As far as intimate relationships are concerned, a fellow is thinking about sex and a girl is thinking about the baby. A fellow responds to what he sees and a girl responds to what she hears. Which is why a girl is always asking, "Do you love me?" And it is not enough for a fellow to say, "Of course." A girl is anxious for a fellow to say, "I love you." Because she responds to what she hears. Is that how we said it? No. My advice to you is that you should never say it until such time as you are sure. Because when you have verbalized it, in those contexts, your word has creative power. And if it wasn't true before, it will be true when you have said it. For that reason, my advice to you is don't say it until such time as you are both sure of it, and saying it comes as no surprise to either one of you. The power of life and death is where? In the tongue. And girls, if you will accept my advice, don't ask the fellow to say it. Of course, you might be anxious to trap him. Don't ask him. My advice to both of you is don't fall in love. Very often a fall in love is a fall. I found it remarkably easy. I've done it often enough to know. The first time it happened, I'm not sure whether she found me in the bath or I found her in the bath. I think I was about 2 1/2. And I steamed the stamps off my father's mail in order to correspond with her. And I swore undying allegiance with all the intensity of which I was capable. I cried myself to sleep when I was 10 with the words of a popular song, "Serenade in the Night Neath a Fair Lady's Window." You would never have thought it of me, Marilyn, would you? There was an orphan girl who had come to school, and I fell in love with her at the first time. She was so forlorn. But the song goes on to say, "But she gave not a sign that she'd ever be mine, so my love story closes. And my pillow was wet with my tears." It's easy to fall in love. So my advice to you is the advice of Solomon again: guard your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. So keep your heart until such time as you have found someone you can trust it with, and then give it to them. Right? Now, the only difference between a marriage at 4 1/2, I wasn't really ready for it. Or so my parents thought. The only difference between an unwise marriage at 4 1/2 and an unwise marriage at 24 1/2 is only a difference of degree. It is not a difference of kind. And you can make a mistake at 24 like I could have made a mistake at 4. There are certain perils that face you on campus. You might not to this time have regarded them as perils. You might only have thought of them as opportunities. I would like to suggest to you that there are certain dangers. There is the danger of availability. A fellow comes and he enrolls at Elim and he said, "Gee, I didn't know there were so many Christian girls in the world." And similarly for a girl, there are lots of them. Do you look at each other once in a while? Right? Did you know that these were fellows over here? I'm sure it had crossed your mind that there must have been some reason for the distinction in uniform. There are lots of partners. Now, given the right set of circumstances, you could fall deeply in love with anybody. You think around your class at the moment and reflect upon the most unlikely person for you to fall in love with. Do you have that person clearly identified at the moment? Now, accept my word for it. Given the right situation, the right setting, you could be head over heels in love with that individual. And there are lots of them around here that you'd find it very, very easy to love. Again, take my word for it, if you haven't already discovered it for yourself. There's the danger of availability. There's the peril of variety. You can be very sure on Monday and see somebody different on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and each one of the partners that you see fits your specification almost exactly. There were certain things that you had left up to the Lord. So you're not quite sure whether the difference in which the specifications are met on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday is the difference that he is making, or whether it is the difference that you're making. And it's awfully difficult, isn't it? It's like a woman at a bargain counter and she can't quite make up her mind. And there's the danger of spirituality. Did you ever think of that as a danger? Regardless of what our real motives were, 90% of the answers to that question about why do you want to come to Elim could be written on any other application form without essentially changing the content of the answer. You have common aims that have brought you here. And of course, you all believe in the leading of the Lord, don't you? You know that God will show you. So you pray, Lord, when I go into the snack bar tonight, does that sound familiar? Lord, if he is the man for me, have Brother Fox ask him to open in prayer in our Old Testament survey class tomorrow morning. Then you can blame Brother Fox. I think it is unfortunate that a fellow might say to a girl, the Lord has shown me that you're not the one for me, when the real reason is that he's found somebody else that he likes better. Does that happen? And then we are all of us so very, very naive, aren't we? We're open to the Spirit. And there's the danger of artificiality. This is obviously not home. But for some of you, it's better than home. You didn't have this many girls at breakfast at home, did you? There's the artificiality, at least it seems to me to be artificial, there's the artificiality of frequent contact. There is the artificiality that we spend 6 days a week in chapel, so that we see each other within a spiritual framework. We have limited horizons of fellowship and entertainment. I know that there are things that are open to you at home that are not open to you here. I know that. All I ask is that we both recognize and accept it, and recognize that within the limited horizons of fellowship and entertainment, we might not really get acquainted in the way that we would get acquainted if our relationship was not artificial. This is not home. Now, we make progress around here, of course. We've made some changes that we hope will lead to a more humane treatment of our inmates. The very fact that I'm talking to you in the way that I am this morning is an indication of the steps that we've taken. But I must solicit your cooperation. And I think that I would like to talk to you in this way, even if this were home. And if you were my youth group and I were your pastor, I would want to talk to you in just this way. Did you hear about the young fellow at school and his principal sent for him? His principal said, I'll teach you to kiss girls around my school. And the fellow said, it's too late, sir, I've already learned. Now, it seems to me that there's really nothing wrong with kissing, provided you recognize the purpose that God had in mind in providing for human osculation. Right? You see, I'm really not sure whether it came from the Garden of Eden or whether it's part of our culture, because I've never tried rubbing noses with my wife. Maybe I should. I've never tried. So that I can't really be sure whether or not kissing is something that goes with the package of being human or whether it is cultural. I do know that culturally and humanly, it is intended as a preliminary. And I haven't yet met any fellow who wants to kiss his maiden aunt in the same way that he wants to kiss his girlfriend. If kissing was all that mattered, why shouldn't you kiss your maiden aunt? There's no reason why you shouldn't. But you don't kiss your maiden aunt in the same way that you kiss your girlfriend, do you? Some of you never tried with your maiden aunt, so you can't quite be sure. Now, it is affected by a law of diminishing returns. The first time it was electric. After a while it becomes static. You might again have heard of the fellow who kissed his girl and felt shivers running up and down his spine. He only afterwards found out that her popsicle was dripping. Now, I am of the opinion that given the right framework, God's blessing rests upon your kissing. I heard of a fellow who was facing a dilemma of this kind, and so he went out to pray, because it is right to pray about things like this. And under the apple tree in the garden, in the backyard, he lifted his eyes to heaven and said, "Father, Father, up above, shall I kiss the girl I love?" He didn't know that his brother was hiding in the apple tree and was somewhat surprised when the reply came down, "Sinner, sinner, down below, pucker up and let her go." I heard of the fellow talking with his girlfriend, and he said, "Honey," that wasn't her name, that was what he called her, just in case there's any misunderstanding. He said, "Honey, can I kiss you?" She didn't answer. He said, "Honey, can I kiss you?" No response. He said, "Honey, are you deaf?" She said, "Are you paralyzed?" Now, there are certain circumstances under which you might expect God's blessing upon your kissing. But you see, it is my understanding that there is a road to travel and only so much time is allotted for the road. You might determine the time. If this is where you meet her and this is where she becomes your wife, then somehow or other, you have to make progress here. And you need to carefully chart out the kind of progress that you're going to be making. If this journey from the first time you see her until the time when you say, "I do, I will," if this journey is intended to take, shall we say, 15 months, doesn't really matter how long, but shall we say 15 months, let's say 18 months, and you go from here to here, in the first 3 weeks. You're going to blow your stack because you've got your foot hard down on the gas pedal and the engine is racing and you've got your foot hard on the power brake at the same time. And only one thing can happen. You're going to burn out your engine. That would be tragic. And so you have to adjust your increasing intimacies so that both of you arrive at the time when you say, I do or I will, and you are ready and you are prepared for it. Do you see what I mean? See, you might see her in the lunch line, and then you might see her in the snack bar, and you make progress. You buy a bottle of Coke and share it between you. Two straws, of course, but one bottle. Right? And then you go on the school picnic. You get an outstation. Accidentally, of course. Right? You take that as confirmation. Now, that is no good reason for accelerating your progress down this road. Right? Now, I'm not suggesting that we should change our cultural patterns so that we arrive here with the same innocence and lack of understanding as we had here. I think that under God, in our cultural framework, I think that is important, there is room for a developing relationship, and we try to provide for that here, and we try to provide for it in our culture. But you need to be very much aware that there is so much road to travel in the time allotted. Now, there are few people who kiss who do not want to kiss more and more often. But it has a law of diminishing returns. We are careful, we try to be careful here, because the real purpose for your coming here might be hindered by an unwise relationship. And you see, one of the ways in which it might be hindered is the very exclusiveness which develops. William James had a little essay on Jack and Jill, and he said, there is nothing wrong with the intensity of Jack's interest in Jill and vice versa. The harm that they both suffer is that by that exclusive interest, each in the other, they shut themselves off from the world and they revolve like bees around a honeypot. And life gets smaller and smaller and smaller. Now, there is a time when it is right for a man to say, forsaking all others, and similarly for a woman. But I question whether it is right in the first 2 weeks of your freshman year. I think that one of the healthy things about our campus life is the way in which we learn to relate. There's nothing really wrong with youthful marriage, provided you're ready for it. There's nothing really wrong with youthful marriage, provided your choice is correct. And when I say ready, I don't mean willing. You might be willing a long time before you're ready. You have to be prepared financially. It might be true that two can live as cheaply as one, provided you recognize that a 50-cent hamburger costs a dollar after marriage, and a 25-cent subway token costs 50 cents. Then two can live as cheaply as one. You have to be prepared financially, you have to be prepared emotionally. The umbilical cord is cut at birth. There are some strings that tie some people to their parents that are not as easily severed. You have to be prepared physically. It might not be a bad idea to be married young, provided you are willing to leave home emotionally. I heard of a young fellow honeymooning in San Francisco. He called up his mother in Los Angeles on the first morning and said, "Mother, what cereal is it that I have for breakfast?" I had a colleague in the ministry, and whenever he was under pressure, no matter what the pressure was, his comment unwittingly was, "Send me back to mother." Do you know what happened in his second pastorate? He went back home to mother. His mother died at about 86 last year. Do you know where he was with his mother? You have to be prepared to leave home emotionally, financially, physically. However, if you say wait, as we sometimes do, then we have to have good reasons. It is said that there are 10 factors contributing to youthful marriage nowadays. One, it's a reflection of the insecurity of our times and the need for youth to find a partner from whom they can receive loyalty and affection. Maybe some of you are anxious to marry young because home was not what you wanted it to be. Let that be a warning to you. When the time comes for you to establish home, you prepare a home in which your children can be comfortable. Two, it might be a reflection of the idea that marriage and the family are not burdens but means of satisfaction. There's no question that there is pleasure in marriage, but there are also responsibilities within marriage. The bandwagon effect, everybody's doing it. Four, there is an encouragement because of a romantic view of marriage. It might begin with you sinking in his arms. It might end with you and your arms in the sink. And puppy love, it has been said, very often leads to a dog's life. A fellow said, "Before I married her, I felt that I could eat her. After I married her, I wished that I had." World War II accelerated it. Korea, Vietnam, and the draft added to it. We'll have to wait and see whether or not, now that there is no draft, there will be a change in the cultural pattern. There are economic attractions to it, like the PhD degree, working wives and fringe benefits, having someone always available to do your laundry, darn your socks, sew your buttons on. There's the acceleration of adult status, like going steady and dating at earlier ages. Do you know there are some mothers who are concerned because their girls are not going steady when they are 8? The stimulation of the sex drive. And it might be a reflection of emotional problems which see marriage as a way out of personal or social problems. But a common problem is an insecure basis for marriage. It might be escape. Did you see that front page of one of the Jesus People magazines? Said, "I thought school was jail until I was drafted into the army. I thought the army was jail until I got married. I thought marriage was jail until I was caught for pushing. Now I see that freedom is the right to choose your own jail." It might well be that some young people see marriage as an escape from home, escape from school, an escape from the community. And most of us are physically prepared for marriage long before we are emotionally prepared for it, and long before we are financially prepared for it. The Word of God says that these two shall be one. The difficulty is that when some of us marry, individually we are not quite sure which one we are going to be. Now, if two people who are unsure of their identity get married, which one are they going to be? About engagement, let me say that I think that from a Christian point of view, I'm not really happy with the engaged to be engaged idea. It'll not be long before we have engaged to be engaged to be engaged. I think that it would be good for us if we let our yea be yea and our nay nay. Culturally, we are accustomed. We have developed a pattern which permits a broken engagement without there being any slur attached to a broken engagement. We're getting to the place where an engagement is almost meaningless. I think that is a pity. Even if it can be broken without much shame, it is hardly ever broken without hurt. It should not be undertaken lightly and should never be entered into in order to gain privileges early, whether those privileges are personal or social, like dating privileges here on campus. I hope that it's not too late to have shared some of these things with you. I hope that last night you didn't make an irrevocable decision, and that you're going to talk to Brother Johansson about it. He'll soon change your mind. Your pledge of allegiance last night might have been interpreted by both of you to be like the laws of the Medes and the Persians. But think on these things, and the Lord give you understanding that was denied to Solomon in some of these matters. Would you like to pass your cards to the center aisle if you've put a question on there or a comment, or even if you haven't? And would the fellows who distributed the cards collect them for me, please? And it might well be that we'll take advantage of a chapel service at some time in the future to answer some of your questions. I promise to benefit from your questions. I don't promise to be able to answer them.